Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Also archived on iTunes and Stitcher. It's Monday, March 31st. Mary, do we have any events?
Well, we actually have to do a correction. So a couple weeks ago, we had a wonderful show with three brewers from Portland, Oregon. But unfortunately, we got our numbers a little mixed up. So I want to set the record straight. So actually, in Portland, there are 53 breweries in the city of Portland. The population is about 600,000. There's actually 73 brewers in the entire metro area, which has a population of about 1.8 million people. And then, if you look at Oregon State overall, there's actually 166 brewing companies across 207 different facilities in the state of Oregon. So that's still a heck of a lot of breweries. If you want to find out more about Oregon craft beer, you can go to OregonCraftBeer.org.
And if you were listening last week's episode with Michael Fairbrother, Moonlight Meadery, we were talking about yeasts and we were talking about 1068, but actually meant 1968, the London ESB yeast, which gives me a little bit of diastole if you don't let it wait too long. That's what I had to say about that.
Okay, so the only event or action going on that we're going to talk about is actually our friend Josh Bernstein, who is a wonderful beer writer, author of The Complete Beer Course and Brood Awakening. We had him on the show sometime last year, I believe, or earlier this year. Anyway, he does these wonderful homebrew tours that both Chris and I have participated in before, where basically he'll take you inside the apartments of homes of several local homebrewers. And the next one's going to be Saturday, May 3rd, and our loft is actually going to be the final stop. So I'm going to be hosting along with Haley Jensen and Stephen Durley, who we've also had on the show, and then another homebrewer called Jeremy Valamont, who I don't think I've actually met before. So that's Saturday, May 3rd. It's the Manhattan to Williamsburg homebrew tour. It's from 1 to 5, and tickets are $30. They're not on sale yet, but they go on sale this Wednesday, April 2nd. And to get more information, go to joshuambernstein.com.
Are you saying we get to see your brew in a bag set up?
That's
right,
true.
Where you brew in a bag at home? I'm so excited. Wait, I live there.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to be pouring some beer as well as likely some cider and short mead and maybe another oddball, one of the oddball beverages I've been working on.
What kind of oddball beverages? Maybe some water kefir, maybe?
No water kefir now, but speaking of water kefir, we have three very special guests, and we actually have our first baby in the studio, which is kind of cool. So Chris and I were actually at the Hot Sauce Expo, which is put on by our friends Jimmy Carboni and Steve Seabury, and it was at the Penn Plaza Pavilion in Manhattan. It was absolutely amazing event. But I happened upon a booth that was actually serving water kefir on tap, which I have never seen. So I introduced myself to this lovely couple and invited them to the studio. So we are in the studio with Robin Jasko
and Paul David.
Hello.
And Ajax David.
Yeah.
And Ajax David.
The first
Ajax.
Baby in the studio.
First of all, what is water kefir?
Water kefir is a cultured fermented drink. It's similar to kombucha or kvass in that it's essentially, a a probiotic natural drink that's filled with lots of good for you stuff. And, you know, I think just part of the sort of wave of, you know, fermented drinks that, and options that's out there right now. But it's an exciting one, and one that I think just not as familiar to people as the others.
How did you become familiar with it?
Well, I became familiar with it because my wife, Robin, who is here, has been actually making it for years.
Then he stole the idea and put it on draft.
And then I stole it and said, I thought we should actually make this available to more people. So, yeah, it's really delicious, and I often wondered drinking it at home, you know, kind of like why anybody would choose to drink regular soda, because it has that sort of soda quality to it, when you could drink something so much healthier for you that tastes better and is, you know, just much better all around. So,
Robin, how did you find out about it and start making it and foster your love for it?
Yeah, so I started making kombucha. First of all, a little bit about me. I try to make everything. No matter what, I've tried to make bread, kombucha,
I know someone else like that,
you know, anything out there. I've always tried to like kind of deconstruct it and try to make it myself instead of buying it. So I started making kombucha, but it takes like 30 days. You know, it's a longer process. And then when I started getting into the fermented world, I discovered water kefir, and I tried it. I bought some grains off the internet and from Maryland's water kefir. I think that was the website. And I tried them out, and within 3 days, I had this, you know, the first ferment, and then with the second ferment, so within a week, I had this beverage that was very similar to soda. And I love seltzer water. And this was so similar to it, but it was natural. It was good for you. It tasted amazing. And you can make your own concoctions depending on what juice you added. So I thought, well, this is a really great idea. So I had a little Etsy site. So I started selling the cultures online, you know, and trying to spread the word about how great they were through my website, Grow Indie. And, you know, ever since then, I've been a big fan of water kefir. It's definitely my favorite fermented beverage. It's much easier than kombucha. And then Paul stole the idea and put it on draft.
Yeah, we had a few challenges to get it to that point where we could, you know, get it into kegs and get it on draft. But yeah, it was a bit of a road. We did do a Kickstarter, which helped us get started and get what we needed to get going. But it's pretty exciting, yeah, but a lot of trial and error.
And you were Project of the Day on Kickstarter. Awesome. Which was great.
We were Project of the Day, so that was pretty exciting.
To help spread the word about water kefir and how great it is, I mean, how amazing it is.
But yeah, a lot of corks flying around in our kitchen and you know, blow-ups in the sink and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we had to wear goggles a lot in our kitchen because fermentation, you know, is a little dangerous sometimes.
That's the only exploding bottle I've ever done was actually a water kefir.
Yeah, it goes fast. It goes real fast, especially if it's warm weather, you know.
Yeah. So let's talk, actually, for those at home. So first of all, where is the, you guys are out of Kutztown, Pennsylvania.
Yep,
is that the proper
pronunciation?
That's correct. Kutztown. Yeah.
Which I've actually been to. That was, I think, one of the first places I was telling you I had cold brewed coffee.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, at Global Libations. Yes, that was one of the, again, sort of, you know, at the forefront of that particular movement.
Kutztown's like the hub of all small batch world.
Yeah.
That's funny. It's like the Brooklyn. In Pennsylvania.
Small batch. How big?
By the way,
we do
have a Brooklyn in Kutztown that is actually called Brooklyn and has been for a long time. It's a certain section, which people who may be hearing this from Kutztown will know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's sort of funny, but yeah, a little strip by the bridge.
Brooklyn Kutztown.
Yep.
Love it.
So so you are on draft in Kutztown currently?
Yes,
so
we're at a Betty's cafe, and we're also at Cafe Santosha, which is in Trexler Town, and in Bethlehem, a new amazing vegan restaurant called Shankara. We're also on draft there as well. And we're in the process of adding more locations, and we're also speaking to a bottler next week. So.
Cool. Awesome. So for those of people who can't quite get water kefir on draft, what would you recommend for somebody that wants to start?
It's really easy to make. I think that there's a variety of places online that do sell kefir grains. Mm-hmm. A good start would just be to, there's a place called Key Sands, for instance, which has really good grains. They'll, you know, just order the sort of starter batch of grains, which I think is like $5 or mm-hmm. something. And then, you know, they come with instructions. So I just follow those right in there. I also have an ebook that I made. So,
oh, very cool.
Yeah, anybody listening to this show who wants that ebook, go ahead and email me at paul@kefirpop.com.
How you spell Kefirpop?
KEFIRPOP.com. So, but yeah, I mean, so you would start with the grains, and then it's just, you know, it's a simple, really simple ferment with some organic sugar and the grains and a little bit of dried fruit. We use apricots and, you know, maybe a little bit of ginger in there. You just let the grains ferment for, you know, sometimes as short as just 24 hours until it sort of gets a bit of a tartness. It'll lose it'll retain about 20% of the sugar content. It'll be converted, sugar that is actually remaining, which will be 80% less, is actually converted from glucose fructose to just fructose only, which is uh-huh. one of the reasons that kefir is more digestible, and even some diabetics can actually tolerate it because your body assimilates it so much easier. But after that first stage ferment, which only takes about a day, then the fun begins because you can choose what kind of flavor you might want to add in the second ferment. If you want to add fizz, pineapple juice works really good. A lot of so does mango, and grapefruit actually is really awesome too.
Will it continue to ferment the sugars and the juices that you add?
Absolutely, and that's the fun part. You go ahead and add the juice in a like a homebrew bottle works really well with a swing top or something airtight. And then depending on the temperature, like maybe even only 24 hours, 1 or 2 days in that bottle, sometimes just overnight actually, and you've got super fizzy, you know, kefir soda. So pretty exciting and, you know, pretty easy to make. But the first step would just be to get those grains.
Mm-hmm. I used to keep water kefir for a while. I have not been keeping it, because I'm doing these other ferments, but I actually ordered mine from Mimus. Okay. And then I also have had friends that have gotten them from Cultures for Health okay. and have had a lot of luck. So those are two places I would recommend.
Also, both of those are great. I'm familiar with those. Again, yeah. Mimus is also an awesome resource yeah. as well. Yes.
And my grains, because I know, so water kefir grains are similar to kombucha in that they're a SCOBY. It's a symbiotic culture of bacteria mm-hmm. and yeast. Mm-hmm. But they just kind of look like, well, we did a milk kefir show mm-hmm. A while back, and those are similar. They're mm-hmm. just, you know, these ferment like a sugar water instead.
Right. The dairy kefir grains are actually opaque, mm-hmm. whereas the water kefir are more translucent. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you know, and some people try to convert the dairy over to water kefir, and you know, it seems to me that for what's involved in that, and that you're probably better off just starting with straight water kefir grains instead. You know, I mm-hmm. think it's a little easier to do it that way.
Yeah. So what flavors do you currently have? So I know yesterday you had a coconut, and then you also had a hot pepper. The one that I tried was hot pepper and
mango.
Mango, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, yeah.
It was delicious.
For the expo, we did want to make a special sort of agua fresca inspired one, which is of course, like, you know, watermelon and hot pepper is great. But so we did we did fresh pepper, home sweet homegrown peppers. Home sweet homegrown peppers and mixed with mango, and that was a big hit. We also had a coconut as well on yeah. draft. So, but we do like ginger pineapple was our starter one, which was really popular. We also have a lemongrass that we do.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, and we're also working on a couple of new flavors. We want to do one with some yerba mate in it as well. So always experimenting with new ideas.
Yeah. Now, talk about troubleshooting, because whenever I would make my water kefir, I did similar to yours. Like, I would do a primary ferment, you know, with just, like, organic white sugar mm-hmm. and water. But then I would always use a little bit of Himalayan pink sea salt for mm-hmm. the nutrients. Do mm-hmm. you use any kind of, you know, kind of nutrient?
Yeah.
I know people use different things. I've heard of people using other things too, but I was
sure. Yeah, that's one that you can definitely do. There's a product called Concentrace, mm-hmm. which is great too. I often add a few drops of that as well. And it, always, I'm sort of a fanatic for Pollux Kefir Pop, which is the name of our drink. I do use only spring water. So we okay. actually get a truck comes and fills up a tank. Great Oak spring water we use. So we always use really good spring water.
How important is that to the fermentation of your grains?
Yeah, I think it's critical. I mean, you can, you know, and it also just the overall taste is so much better too. You know, that said, if you don't have access, it will work. You know, it, one of the most critical things, of course, is chlorine, right? So you want to avoid that. I think it's critical. There's some debate on how critical it is if you sort of scour around the internet. But my personal view is that, if at all possible, to use spring water. Yeah, because it has the minerals in there already, which is always best, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a water kefir, we're going to take a break in a second, but water kefir really captures flavors beautifully. I mean, better than almost any other thing, any kind of other fermentation. Like I feel like strawberry is always a very difficult flavor to capture, and yet the water kefir really,
I've never had that. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite. So I guess we're going to take a brief break, and we'll be back with Robin and
Paul David.
I know, I always want to call you David Paul, but it's Paul David.
Forget about it.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here with Robin Jasko and Paul David of Home Sweet Homegrown.
And as well as...
As Pollock's well Kemper Pop.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
All part of the same deal, though.
Well, fantastic. And we're talking about kefir pop. And when you make kefir, you're doing the fermentation. How strong can kefir get alcohol-wise?
Yeah, that was one of the big challenges. Of course, the national limit there is 0.5% alcohol by volume. So, you know, we did have to be really careful with the amount of sugar in the first ferment and also, you know, how we do our flavors and stuff. But, generally speaking, if you follow the standard, which is like a quarter cup of sugar per quart is kind of what the vast majority of places suggest. You're never going to go above 1%. ABV. It'll, generally speaking, be lower than that. Some people, you can actually make beer with kefir grains using juice and other, you know, the more sugar, the more alcohol. So,
the grains can handle it once. I mean, what do you know if there's alcohol in solution when the kefir will just stop?
It actually.
Or will it keep going?
It will go. Actually, kefir is, I will tell you, I used to think, well, if I just keg it and put it in the fridge, I used to think putting it in the fridge would be sufficient. Absolutely not.
In order
it
to
just
stop
keeps going. It keeps going. So it will go right until there's no sugar left at all. I mean, as long as there's any sugar, which is why you'll notice that commercial products in the market generally use non-fermentable sugars to stop that, like stevia, for instance, and some other sort of tricks up their sleeve. Synergy with their kombucha has had this challenge and had to completely reformulate their product with the that whole you know, episode with where they got pulled from the shelf. So it does remain, and so that was challenging. I think that we were able to strike a pretty good balance with our product. But I think people making it home, though, I can't imagine ever going above 2%, and that would be assuming you used a lot of juice and really let it sit out for a long time. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, what is the shelf life on? So when you keg, how much are you making at a time, and when you put it into a keg, how long will it last? What do you recommend for your patron?
We have, for the expo, we were using 5-gallon Cornelius kegs. I have what I call kefirators, not kegerator, but kefirator. And those are small little box fridges that I sort of modified, and those have 2.5-gallon Cornelius kegs in there.
Because kefir is really great when it's fresh. I mean,
it's popping,
and you want to drink it fresh. You don't want to be sitting on a keg of kefir.
No, that was what you were asking. I say about the shelf life is a month that I usually put on my kegs for those, and it used to be even less, you know, with my earlier attempts, just because I had to work on things. But yeah, a month, 30 days is about what the cap. But it's very rare because a 2.5-gallon keg is only 25 cups.
Right.
Usually, for instance, Shankara went through theirs in 24 hours. So, it's pretty unusual that a cafe would have it even close to a month. So, about a month. I mean, and if you're making it at home, you know, definitely in your fridge, it can be good, I would say, for as long as a month in your fridge. And sometimes it even tastes better, actually, I think, after a couple weeks, you know, if it's kept in the fridge. It seems to get a really nice quality.
Just get mature lagering stage, if you will.
A little bit. But you're right. You don't want it to go too far to the acidic side.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Robin, let's ask you. So, when I met you guys, you handed me this book called Home Sweet Homegrown, which is absolutely fantastic. So, I was looking at it earlier today. Anyway, so tell us a little bit about how you got started and about Home Sweet Homegrown.
So I've always loved gardening, and I actually started the community garden in our town, Kutztown. So, and I also had a blog called Grow Indie, which then I was offered a book deal through Microcosm Publishing to write Home Sweet Homegrown. So it kind of all evolved from there. But with Home Sweet Homegrown, basically every year I look at about 40 different gardening books, and I wanted to have a simple guide that kind of used all of those books. I didn't want gardening to be intimidating.
That's Ajax in the background. He doesn't understand that we're on the radio right now.
He's saying hello.
Hey. Ajax is adorable. Yeah. Yesterday he had a pacifier with a mustache on it.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty awesome.
My friend Tracy gave us that. So in my book, I cover everything from how to grow a garden, how to start a garden, you know, everything from seed, why you should grow a garden. I talk about GMOs and heirloom varieties. And then I do cover what to do with all of your vegetables, from freezing and storing and fermenting. I have a whole section on fermenting, because fermentation is a fantastic way to use up a lot of extra vegetables. Yeah. Like when we would go to the garden, and basically I had a work CSA at the community garden that we ran, and people who helped me grow a lot of food, because I would try all these different varieties. I would do a lot of trials of heirloom tomatoes and peppers, and people who helped me for 3 hours a week would get a box of food to take home for no cost. So I called it a work CSA, because CSAs are so expensive. For some people, they can't afford it. And I wanted, you know, organic food accessible to all. So that was what really worked in our community. And people loved it. But we'd take home, you know, 1 week we'd have like 20 pounds of radishes. And what do? Well, you make pickles. You've learned to ferment. You make kimchi. So that's kind of how I got into that. And there's so much more nutrition in fermented foods, because it's living. And I thought that was a really important thing for people to learn about. And I tried to make it simple. I actually have a recipe in there called How to Ferment Anything.
Love that. So you just...
Anything. Any vegetable. So that people can, if they have, you know, a CSA box with tons of kohlrabi, what do you do? You know, here's how to ferment it.
What do you do?
You can ferment... I like kohlrabi just sliced, just plain, as a, you know, just... Right out, just slice it up, eat it raw. It's like a really good appetizer. You can add other things on top of it. You can cut it into like little discs and add like some hummus on top. But it's, you know, a really crisp, crunchy vegetable. I don't actually like it cooked, so
That's cool. I love the other thing I love about this book is that so it's subtitled How to Grow, Make, and Store Food No Matter Where You Live.
Yes.
So specifically, you know, Chris and I talk a lot about urban brewing. I teach a brew in a, this brew in a bag technique at Brooklyn Homebrew, and that is one of the difficult things about homebrewing, but a lot of things in the city, we don't have the space. So I think this is great. You actually talk specifically about how much people can grow on, you know,
yes,
in
I have
the
a
smallest
plant.
Of spaces. So.
And I even have a plant in a bag garden, mm-hmm.
wow.
which is similar to what you just
dig it.
You know. Yeah, and a lot of I think this book is excellent for a lot of people, but especially if you're an urban fermenter, if you do fermented mm-hmm. vegetables, or even you know brewing or making water kefir or kombucha or whatever. This would. You know, it's a great to actually be able to grow a few of the things that you then can use in your fermentation.
Exactly. So. And because you want to use organic vegetables, if you're fermenting and you're going through the, you know, the process of fermentation, you have to use the best. You might as well mm-hmm. use the best organic vegetables. And if they're homegrown, they're just so nutritious because you just pick them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. I do a lot of talks at urban garden workshop, you know, in urban garden workshops and just try to encourage people to grow their own food, even if they only have a windowsill.
Yeah.
That's kind of my MO. Just try growing some lettuce, grow some basil. You know, just get some green in your apartment. And that's why I loved meeting all these folks, you know, this weekend, because we got them to grow pepper plants and we were talking about growing stuff. And some people were so excited. I've already been getting a lot of pictures from people who took their plants to the 42nd floor. There's, yeah. you know, high rise and there are plants in the window and they're growing peppers. So, yeah, we're excited about that.
I love that you yeah. brought those plants to Hawaii.
I started those from seed in January, and I was like, I'm going to bring those to New York City, and yeah, it was
spread the pepper love. So you also make hot sauces that you sell, and you had those at the expo as well.
I do.
And one of them is actually made with Victory yeah. beer, correct?
Yes, it yes. is.
So
yes.
I think that's cool. That's only the second hot sauce that I've, that. Well, we saw another hot sauce maker that makes beer. So let's talk a little bit about, so you have a field of peppers
I
where you
do
planted.
Now. So what happened when the book came out last year, we launched a Kickstarter campaign to do an Amtrak book tour, and it took off. We actually raised $13,000 to go across the country via Amtrak, but I planted a bunch of peppers before we left. So when I came back, I was like, why don't we make some hot sauce to sell with my book at book signings? And it took off as well, and people loved it. So I did another Kickstarter campaign, and my goal was $850, and it ended up going to over $53,000.
Wow. That is amazing.
So it was the highest selling hot sauce in Kickstarter history. Everyone got behind growing your own. They were really excited because we grew our peppers. So throughout the you know last season, we took pictures every week and we sent pictures of the peppers as they were growing. That's so people awesome. All over the world could see what they helped make happen.
That's awesome.
Were your hot sauces fermented?
They were not. They're not fermented. But I do appreciate fermented hot sauce. Yeah. So
yeah.
I'm curious about it. I don't know enough about it. I do like fermented hot sauces, but I don't know what
happened. You put the beer in it, though.
I did put the beer in it.
In the partnership with Victory.
Yeah, so the partnership with Victory was great because we had Guinness in one of our sauces, but I didn't realize Guinness wasn't vegan. And one of my Kickstarter backers said, hey, you said your sauces are vegan, but they're not, and I had no idea. And I thought, why am I not using a local beer anyway? So I contacted Victory, and we have a wonderful partnership with them. All their beers are vegan. I love that company. They're really sustainable. They're great folks to work with, and we're excited about it. So, yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, that's very cool. And that is on if you can find more about Robin and her company, Home Sweet Homegrown, at homesweethomegrown.com.
Yep.
You're looking at me funny. Why are you looking at me funny? peppers.
Water kefir.
What else are you growing at home?
All right, I have about 1,300 heads of garlic right now that I can't wait. I mean, we do things in large scale. So we did last year I was pregnant and I started 300 tomato plants from seed. And I was harvesting garlic right before I had AJ. It was kind of crazy. But I'm really excited about garlic this year because we do a smoked garlic. And pickled garlic is really good too. So.
Now, do you sell these too, or are these just something that you make for?
We do at certain events when it's in season. Mm-hmm. So it usually goes pretty quick. The smoked garlic is usually gone within 2 weeks. I'll send you some. It is amazing, actually. We smoke everything for about 14 hours, and it really picks up all the flavor. I mean, smoked garlic is a delicacy. I've never had anything like it before. It's fantastic.
And you make a lot of kimchi too.
I do make a lot of kimchi and sauerkraut. I'm a huge sauerkraut junkie.
Now, are you growing cabbage too, or do you buy it?
I've done that before. Local? Like, I've done before, like 50 heads of cabbage, mm-hmm. and then I would teach. Then the people that help me grow it, we then harvest all the cabbage, and then we'll do a little, like, you know, afternoon of making sauerkraut, and then everyone has amazing sauerkraut in their fridge for the next month or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. What's your favorite kind of kimchi to make, or kind of your...
I like the spicier the better, of course. So I like to add a lot of garlic, a lot of red pepper, a lot of habanero to my kimchi. Bok choy kimchi is actually really good and a good way to use up a lot of bok choy. I even like baby bok choy kimchi. That's really easy to make. And it ferments a lot faster because it's not as a start. It's not as a crisp, you know, bok choy is a little easier to ferment. So that's a favorite of mine. We ferment everything. Daikon radishes, yeah. It's great.
Whatever. Yeah, that's very cool.
You have to come to the farm.
I know. I would love to come. I haven't been to Kutztown in a long time.
You're welcome.
Anytime. Right on the Beaver bus.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
It's right
I've been on that bus before.
Paul, how big batches of kefir are you making at a time?
I do 15 gallons.
15 gallons.
Yeah, so not a lot right now, but I mean, you know, it's a fairly quick process, relatively speaking, in the, in the world of ferments. So, you know, we are able to, you know, we have a small space in Kutztown, and, you know, we just sort of started out. So, you know, we try to stockpile as much as we can, but it's usually in 15-gallon batches, which is, you know, I guess like about six of our little kegs at a time.
That's great. And people are receiving it well, and it's moving.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I would say we did really well at the expo. I mean, we sold out of everything we had very quickly. I mean, like, of course, people were looking for something to cleanse their palate.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's been doing quite well. I think overwhelmingly positive feedback on the
kefir pot. Well, hopefully we'll be able to drink it in Brooklyn at some point.
Yes, actually, I've been in... Yes, I'm hoping soon. You know, there's a couple places in Brooklyn. And
like
we're
Local
hoping
61, we were talking
61 about. 61 Local is one, yeah. So there's a few who have been sort of waiting, you know, but we're going as quickly as we can.
Yeah.
So kefirpop.com?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And homesweethomegrown.com?
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. And definitely, if you guys are, if you haven't done gardening or you do some gardening but you're interested in learning more, really this is a wonderful little book. And you can find out about it on your website, correct?
Yep, it's right there. Yep, cool. You can order it.
Super. Well, thank you guys so much for being in the studio.
Thank you guys so much.
Talking
so
water,
fun.
And peppers.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Ferment about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.